we're talking kind of about sales tax. You don't have to leave, really. We can throw sex in here too. I mean, we'll do anything to keep people here. Personally, I was, you know, going to hire these two giant bruisers at the door because usually, you know, somehow they always put a great lecture on, you know, that fills the room, and then I come and it's like a mass exodus. And I sit there and say, no, I could be fun too, really. I could, you know, put bruisers, don't let them out.
Lock and bar the door before you tell the
right.
title.
Exactly. We're here basically because we've been talking about sales tax, and I have been blessed that I've been invited to this forum now for the third year. This is Cricket's only second year. He came last year. His name actually was Doom and Gloom at that time. He had two names. But what we were always talking about was the potential change in law. And we were talking about a fundamental philosophical change. And the gentleman brought up a question which talks about old law. And we're now going to start talking about new law. The old law was that no one could charge sales tax unless you had a physical establishment, what many people call PE, in the state that you are selling from. So in other words, if you were a manufacturer and you were selling to another state and you had no physical operation in that state, no physical presence, no what we call brick and mortar, I'm going to use terms that you'll see more and more in newspapers. You did not have to charge sales tax to that customer. Well, something started to happen, and we're going to go back in time. We're going to play Doctor Who here and go back in time in the little TARDIS and go back to 2001, where the EU was screaming to themselves, the European Union, that people were VAT shopping. That is value attributable tax, which is, I would say, roughly, if we use real big broad strokes, it's sales tax. That's their way of saying sales tax. They basically said, well, you know, if you go to Luxembourg under the old rules, you only have to charge 3% VAT. And if you're in Spain, you have to charge 15%. So all businesses were moving over to Luxembourg. This isn't good. Let's now say, instead of basically where the goods are being manufactured, it's now going to be where the goods end up. So if this guy in Luxembourg is shipping to Spain, he's now going to have to do a 15% VAT tax. And even better, if we put this in place, we can beat the shit out of Microsoft. Which wasn't that bad an idea, but that's a political comment on mine. Because the reason is as everyone knows, that when you do upgrades, you can do it over the internet. You can download them over the internet. And the law was especially specifically stated, digital downloading software. That's what the law stated. Now we'll be taxed where the consumer downloads it. So now, that's what the EU said. Well, the OECD said, hey, we're going to handle we handle international commerce. We're the big boys on the block. We like this concept of where the consumer does it. So, 2002, the EU passed a law basically changing the landscape in Europe, changing what we call in the business Nexus, and that's NEXUS. And that was the change that heralded the disaster of small business in my mind. Because if you take a look at small business in the EU pre that law and then post that law, it's actually plummeted. The EU changed. Now, I think you all remember in about 2002, 2003, the United States, the states of the United States, like Georgia. I come from New Hampshire, so I always throw New Hampshire in, by the way, and California, which really goes below both Georgia and New Hampshire for other reasons, decided we are having economic crisis. We are all losing money. We are losing money not because we overspent during the heydays, not because we went too much in debt, because internet commerce is taking money out of our pockets. More than catalog sales, which was in the 80s where they tried to say that. So they created something called the SSTP, the State Streamlined Sales Tax Project. Now they did this even though there is a Supreme Court case that specifically states that you do not need to collect sales tax unless you have a physical establishment. They said, nah, if Europe can do it, we can do it. So they started in 2002, strange, the year that it got passed in the UU, they all decided to get together and do this. And they then started to promote uniformity, their definition of uniformity, and volunteerism. Last year, they received 80% of the states, 41% of the states, which had 80% of the US population, all agreed to do this. So they believe they now have the mandate of the people. My statement is they have the mandate of the governors and the legislatures of the state, but they don't have the mandate of the people. They then went out and promoted and asked for proposals on how to implement and to get what they called certified providers that would implement this. But they're going to help small business because small business won't have to pay for this because the providers are going to get paid by the state. But the people that they picked to become providers have pretty much stated that the states can't pay us enough money, so now they're now changing it, that now the people in the states will pay the money, even though it's directly contradictory. But here's how it works now. And we have 12 states that have, there are 41 states right now that are starting to change their laws. Of the 41, 12 have already changed their laws enough. Yes, sir.
One question before things go too far. Have any of these states signed reciprocal state handshakes with each other?
Don't have to. The SSTP is a reciprocal handshake. It's built in.
Okay, then what I'm at, I guess what I'm asking you on there is, have the state legislatures specifically adopted the SSTP uniformly as written?
Yes.
Okay.
For 15 of them.
Okay, okay. Then it's looking, because I use work for Kentucky Revenue, mm-hmm. It's looking like what they're doing could be considered legal.
No, because they're crossing state lines and they're changing the nexus. In other words, perfect example, used to be under any law in Kentucky mm-hmm. that you are a manufacturer in Kentucky, mm-hmm. you ship to Georgia.
Right.
You don't charge Georgia sales tax, especially if you don't have a PE, okay?
Okay.
Now, what is happening is, again, you're in Kentucky, mm-hmm. you're shipping to Georgia, you have to charge Georgia sales tax.
I understand.
Which is not, because under federal law, you cannot charge sales tax unless you have a physical presence.
In that state.
Unless, here's the caveat. Here's the caveat. If, now this is where they may have to actually go, they may have to actually go negotiate 50 separate times instead of the one universal agreement they're doing, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
It is akin to an extradition situation, where the state of Kentucky and the state of Georgia, or the state of New Hampshire, let's say, okay, if Kentucky agrees with New Hampshire that I will make my businesses charge your sales tax, if you will make your businesses charge my sales tax, then it is a reciprocal state agreement and it defaults from interstate commerce.
Actually, it doesn't default because you also have a Supreme Court case that specifically addresses sales tax. And sales tax does not default out of interstate commerce, as well as you have approximately 4 states in the union that do not charge sales tax.
I understand.
Okay.
I understand.
So that you can't segregate out those 4 states.
Yes, you can.
And you cannot.
Yes, you can.
Under interstate commerce law, you can't.
Yes, you
and
can.
Actually, you can't.
Anyway, let's go on from there.
Okay. Also, the SSTP disagrees with you also. They already have stated that unless they get legislature from the federal government or they get the Supreme Court to rule in their favor, mm-hmm. okay, they admit that only, this can only be voluntary. That is, if they can't get it, it is in essence illegal. So I understand what you're saying. I really do. Okay. But this is the one time I'll agree with the SSTP that from an interstate commerce clause, okay, they can't do it. It is basically, they've agreed that it is illegal, that they need the federal government to bless it. But we're going to get into voluntarism in a moment, because that's when your statement becomes valid. Because what is voluntary and what's not voluntary? Right now, the SSTP will be voluntary, except for this problem. You have 15 states now that have changed their laws. Their laws are on the book stating that if you ship to another state, nexus has been changed. Therefore, you must assess tax of that sales tax state. So if you're in a small business situation and you're doing an internet e-commerce website, you have a minor problem. My website's based in Georgia. Actually, let's pick a state that let's talk about New Jersey.
South Carolina.
South Carolina is not going to be one of the first 12. The first 12 that are coming in are actually 13. Are Ohio, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, Nebraska, New Jersey, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and West Virginia. Those are the first group that will start. Rhode Island was supposed to be in this group. Rhode Island stated that they were going to go and suspend it for a year and come in next year. There are supposed to be 5 more states coming in next year into this program. Yes.
Most of those states you just listed would seem to be not ones we would normally associate with something like this.
Yes.
Which we'd normally expect to see, like it's from California, New York, your bigger ones, either as producers or as consumers.
Yes.
Was there a particular reason they picked sort of the little remote?
No, they didn't pick these. These are the state legislatures that have taken the SSTP rules and guidelines and passed them and accept them as their own. There are in California's due next year. New York is due 18 months from October. It's just, you're right, and the problem is your legislature is so large in those states and so contradictory. And there are a lot more people fighting in those states. Florida is a perfect example where the mail order catalog people are so heavy that they're blocking this every which way but up. Yes.
Also, to piggyback on the side of what we were saying, what certain people don't understand, and let me explain this as best I can, I work for a company called Galls, which is the nation's largest supplier to police departments, fire departments, emergency service agencies, that kind of thing. A lot of people will normally think, well, you're located in Kentucky, why are you charging California or Connecticut or Washington State or South Carolina sales tax? Unfortunately, Galls is owned by a larger company called Aramark. Aramark has a business presence in every state of the Union.
Right.
Okay. Connecticut, Washington, California, the whole bunch of them say, because your pappy is there and they own you 100%, you must behave as though you are there. So a lot of times, even though the company that you are specifically buying things from is not by whatever rules required to charge sales tax, their parent corporation is, and it's piggybacking on that.
We can talk about that for a real quick second, is California, the Barnes & Noble case. And the Barnes & Noble case was very much, Barnes & Noble opened an online distribution center where you can buy books online. Barnes & Noble is in every state in the union. Barnes & Noble online did not charge sales tax. The California booksellers petitioned the Department of Revenue of California and stated, we feel that this is unfair competition. Now, contrary to what the gentleman said, California stated that they would have allowed Barnes & Noble online to continue to not charge sales tax, except for this reason. You could take a Barnes & Noble online book and you had the ability to return it to a Barnes & Noble brick and mortar. So as soon as they did that, also they said, online, we'll give you coupons so that you get, you know, your typical 10, 20% next book. You can redeem that at a Barnes & Noble brick and mortar. And California ruled, because you interconnected your business in such a way that you're relying both on your online as well as your brick and mortar, you must charge sales tax. Barnes & Noble decided, by the way, to charge sales tax. They caved in. They weren't going to take away the promotion or give the benefits out to the customer or consumer. So what you now have is you have a revenue state saying, we're going to do this. Now, I was at North Dakota in front of their Senate in regards to the SSTP. And their statement, their senator, who basically pushed this through their legislature, said, well, you know, this is voluntary. No one in our state has to do this. And I looked at him and I said, in your laws, like Oregon, because Oregon did do what I call a trigger, which is in their statutes, that everything switches over when the SSTP is blessed by the federal government, just a little switch, and Oregon all of a sudden has a sales tax, which I'm sure is going to make everybody in Oregon really pleased because it was one of the states that didn't have a sales tax. But, you know, hey, big deal. It's only the local people that will get suffered there. I asked the gentleman, I said, is it on the books? He said, yes. I said, so you have laws on the books that are voluntary. He said, well, no. I said, but you just told me that this law was voluntary. He said, well, it's voluntary, but it's not. And I said, you're a great legislature. You have a minor issue. And he said, okay. I said, so are you saying to me that our people are going to have to obey our laws? I said, you know, I'm from New Hampshire. I would think that if you write a law, it's going to have to be obeyed. And he said, well, yeah, but we won't enforce it. And my statement was, well, if you're going to put a law on the books, I mean, because I'm a very, you know, I'm basically an accountant. You know, I'm like plus and minus. I'm sitting there. You're going to put a law on the books. And you don't want it to be taken care of. Why don't you put a statement there that until something happens, don't do it? Oh, no, no. We want to be one of the first states to enforce this. So what has happened is, and it is changing, and we are now really into is that sales tax nexus has been changed. I can't make blanket statements as the gentleman did before. I have dealt with subsidiaries that have parents, corporations in every state, and we've been able to go to the departments of revenue in those states and become exempt from the sales taxes. There are companies that don't take that position. I respect them. It's a position that is not what I would consider either correct or aggressive because, you know, I don't want to incur compliance. I don't want to charge sales tax to the end user, but that's a different issue. Now, what is how did e-commerce, and let me tell you, I want to give you an example of how this really affected an individual. And it's actually, unfortunately, a true story. This gentleman in 2002 was a very heavy chain smoker. And he happened to live in New Jersey. And New Jersey has some really horrific sales tax on smoking cigarettes. So he went on the internet and he found this tribe that he could buy on the internet. And, you know, he said, well, this is what I pay on sales tax and this is what I pay on freight. And, you know, I'm saving a lot of money, first on the price of the cigarettes, and yeah, I lose a little because of the freight, but I'm making money. I can keep my smoking habit and actually save money. You know, and I'm a non-smoker, and we'll put that part aside. And he did this. He did this for 3 years. And he was happy, and every time he smoked a cigarette, I can tell you he was probably saying, look how much money I'm saving. And we will ignore that the state of New Jersey actually has a return that basically if you do internet sales, you're supposed to declare it. Of course, the states all acknowledge that 95% of the people ignore that box or put down $5 just to placate them. You know, here, have a $5 and leave me alone. Well, Jersey found this gentleman because Jersey basically went to the tribe, with a subpoena and got all their mailing lists. And they then very nicely sat there and said, okay, went through all the lists, sent them a notice. Said, we have records in hand that you, a New Jersey resident, have been buying sales tax from this Indian reservation all this time. And we figure you owe us $23,000 worth of back sales tax, which we are now allowed to assess because we joined the SSTP and that Indian reservation was in a state. So even though it was an Indian reservation and under federal law, Indian reservation is not subject, by the way, to income tax, but to sales tax, believe it or not, they didn't get exempted out under the Indian treaties. So he now has a $23,000 bill from New Jersey, the state that he lives in, because he did what e-commerce was set up to do. It was set up to basically create competition and get the best price for the consumer. So we now have, yes, ma'am. Oh, was that a yawn? I'm sorry. You can yawn when I talk. I'm used to it, believe me. Go ahead.
Could you compare that to, okay, in the state of Georgia, everybody pays the same sales tax, not even in metro Atlanta. And so for big ticket items, I live in the city of Atlanta, and for big ticket items, I will drive to Cobb County.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's 5% sales tax. So can the city of Atlanta say, hey, you owe us blah, 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 because, you know, I chose to buy an item in Cobb County rather than in Fulton County.
Well, one of the issues, first of all, one of the issues, it's going to be very humorous. Now we get it to humor. I got, by the way, I considered what's voluntary and what's not voluntary humor from a state legislature. So you understand my warped sense of personality. So the SSTP says that every state has to be uniform within a sales tax of a specific item. It also states every locality within the state has to be uniform. So the question I would raise to you, if I'm in, I'm sorry, Cobbs County?
Cobb County.
Okay, Cobb County. If I'm, is Cobb higher or lower?
Lower.
So if I'm in,
Cobb is 8, Cobb is 5.
Okay, so if I'm in Cobb, all right, and I see that Fulton's getting 8, and I got to do a uniformity. I have to be uniform within the state. I have a feeling between you and me, Fulton ain't going down. I don't know why. You know, call me, you know, humorous. It's not going down. So what's going to end up happening? Cobb's got to go up. Now I got even a better one. How about all the communities that may be in this state that don't charge a sales tax? They're going to have uniformity. So if they're going to look and say, you know, Cobb was getting 5, now they're getting 8, and I'm in County X, and I'm getting nothing. This might be a good thing to do, getting this 8%. Yes, sir.
I was under the impression that the various counties had to have the same rate within their particular county, not necessarily that they all had to have the same rate across the state.
The SSTP has defined it has to have the same rate all across the state. That's the SSTP that's defined it.
Uh-huh.
Now the state legislatures have agreed that the states will have it all across the state lines. Mm. They are still negotiating in regards to locality issues. Mm. I mean, North Dakota basically said, no localities, no. But she brought up the state of Georgia, and Georgia hasn't taken a position on that at this time.
Well, I know various municipalities and counties in Alabama are fighting it because they don't want the state collecting for them, because when they came out from under the state collection, they wound up getting between 20% and 30% more tax money as opposed to under the state, who supposedly had more muscle.
Oh, well, what the states do, as you know, is if they're going to collect for the county, they're going to charge a collection fee. You know, because after all, they're collecting money that used to go directly to county. Now they're being called they're sourcing and they're putting, I don't know, maybe 22 seconds of megabyte time on a computer to basically process it. But that's worth 20%. And Alabama basically is going to be becoming effective, I'd say 2006. They've already passed the legislation. The legislation based on bill number HB 694, which was introduced by Representative Graham, which you may know, I do not know the gentleman, was brought into play, it was passed, and it basically brings the state into compliance with the SSTP agreement, and they basically have it as 2006.
Weather permitting.
Always weather permitting.
How does PLOS taxes factor into that? Because I know Georgia has pretty much does have a flat tax base, but each county is allowed to add on a SPLOS tax for whatever project is going on, SPLOS being the special local tax.
Right.
And legally, they have to have a start and a stop date.
Right.
But legislation always finds something else to add on, so essentially it never goes away.
Right.
You know, we'll do it for this road, okay, that road's done, all right, well, we need it for this complex, or we'll just extend it that way.
But you got to be careful here, because as I understand those taxes are more of an income tax aspect, not a sales tax aspect.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. No. So, I mean, the ones that I've seen have been all income tax based, where, in other words, you do a special project that you're going to do, so therefore you go to the county and say, okay, we're building a road. So therefore, we're going to request an increase in either your real estate tax that's going to get bumped, or an income tax, a piggyback on your income tax.
Well, that's why Fulton County went up to 8%, supposedly to help with the sewage system that needs all the pipes need to be replaced.
In Georgia, effectively, it's an additional sales tax.
It is. Okay.
Yeah, I worked in retail. I saw it go from 5 to 8 in a day.
So what you were basically saying for that, for those type of special projects, believe it or not, I'm now reviewing where it would fall under the law. It would be classified as a capital improvement project if it's for sewer or roads, and if it then is affected by sales tax, it could fall under an exception, because there is an exception in the SSTP that says for capital improvements of a short duration. Now, by the way, they don't define what short is, and they don't define what duration is. That's left to the state or the locality. You can increase or fall out of the spread.
Actually,
yes, ma'am.
I'd like to go back to her question.
Which
but
one?
Change it to a state level issue.
Sure.
Her question was, the cigarette tax that this gentleman is asked to pay,
yes,
on an e-commerce transaction,
yes,
can she be asked to pay back taxes on a brick-and-mortar transaction conducted in another locality? And I'd like to change it to a state issue. I live in Maryland,
okay,
which has a 5% state tax. I routinely do my Christmas shopping in Delaware,
mm-hmm,
which has no sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
Can the state of Maryland knock on my door and say, I don't know how they'd get the records, but you spent $15,000 on Christmas presents, you owe us.
Right. The state of Maryland, once they pass and conform to the SSTP, can retroactively go back and assess you that. Once they do it, they haven't done it yet, they're not scheduled, I think, to 2007. So you got a little bit more time. In regards to how they will find out, well, I'm going to we're going to touch a little bit on how people get traced. You pay credit card? That was a nod. Because she's in the back, she paid credit card. Visa, MasterCard, American Express have always taken a position, if the state subpoenas it, more than happy to comply. They keep about 10 to 15 years back of your history. Which was the big fiasco with Visa when they got broken into. Everybody lost all their files. You know, the states were more screaming than anybody else, but nobody realized that. So, yes, you do have that problem, that your state can go back. Now, as I remember your state of Maryland, I believe there is an internet sales clause, because we're talking e-commerce here. So if you actually went on the internet to buy your gifts and you bought them outside the state, and therefore, under the old law, if you bought them anywhere other than the 15 states or 12 that I talked about first, if you didn't buy them in those days, they would never charge a sales tax. And you would weigh reduced price versus freight, and you still may be better off than your short trip. Well, those records you definitely can go get hit on because you cross state lines and you're the consumer. Yes?
How retroactive are they going to make that? As in, will it only be retroactive from once they enacted, or will it be a case of we're enacted and we're going to start charging 5 years back?
Okay, well, here's the, all right. The state has a position, and now we get into statute of limitations. I said we're going to be all over the board here. Statute of limitations is a basic state and federal requirement that once you file, the state has a certain amount of time to go back and say and reassess you. That's, you know, real broad stroke. Well, if you haven't filed anything, then the statute hasn't run. And so the laws can actually be used retroactively because sales tax is sales tax. Your state always had a sales tax. I'm assuming you're in Georgia, right? So we can't use New Hampshire. Stop it, behave yourself. Doesn't want to stand there. There it goes. New Hampshire doesn't have a sales tax, so I don't care what they do. Kind of like, you know, go 50 years back, you didn't have it, you can't have it. Georgia's had a sales tax all during this time. Therefore, they, if you didn't never filed, never declared, never paid them their money, their revenue that they've been trying to grab, they can go retroactively back. Statute hasn't run.
How long would the statute of limitations be, if any?
Normal statute of limitations, well, statute of limitations federally is 3 years. We're not talking about criminal and things of that nature. We're talking, you know, we're not talking tax fraud. We're talking taxes. States usually follow the federal government, and I would say that probably, 3 years, but each state can set its own statute. Now, I know certain states, I do not know the state of Georgia, and certain states are 4 years. I know one state that's 5 years. So,
civil action here is 2 years.
Yeah, but taxes aren't civil.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish it was. I wish it was. Yes, sir. Do you need a mic? We'll get one to you.
Yeah, give us a second.
We're stalling for me, trust me.
Stall.
I need all the help I can get.
I mean, isn't when people, when states and stuff go back in, you know, years and years, and they say they're going to tax you for going to other counties buying stuff, and then they say, okay, you go into that county to buy stuff because the tax will lower.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then isn't you, I mean, you dip it into like pursuit of happiness, freedom to go anywhere, to buy anything at any time. That's a thing about United States of America.
That's right. Well, again, that goes back to the old law versus the new law. The old law was it never cared where the consumer lived. The old law never cared where you lived.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you could go anywhere you want and buy whatever you want and figure out, hopefully, how you get the best deal possible.
Yeah.
Okay. That's old law. Okay.
It ain't no such thing in the old law.
Well, no, that's old law in the regards to sales tax, is that the sales tax states, because they really, I don't think personally cared too much if you crossed county line, but when you started to cross state lines, when people started to get on the internet and basically ignore sales tax entirely, they basically said, we the state cannot keep what state are you from, sir? I'm sorry.
Georgia, right?
Georgia, okay. I will not make that assumption that you're from Georgia.
Uh-huh.
So you got the state of Georgia saying, you know, we have to provide you with municipal services. We have to provide you with police. We have to provide you with, you know, protection. We have to provide you with the courts. Let me finish, and then you can jump.
Okay.
Okay. And therefore, if you as a consumer keep going out of our state or go on the internet to buy stuff to get delivered here, our fundamental tax base that supports all these services that they to you are coming from sales tax and income tax and real estate tax. If you are going to diminish our tax base We have to find a way to bring that tax base back to our coffers so that we basically can still provide you with the services that you require.
That ain't none of that business.
Well, but that's their, I can't argue with their statements, okay, because their statements are valid. The problem is that it isn't costing them that much money. And my concern is,
therefore, they shouldn't be worried about it.
Well, they are, because this is what they have done is they don't have to go to you in this state and say, I'm going to raise sales tax. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do that. They're going to sit there and say to you now, guess what? We're going to the next state. The people in those states that buy from our Georgia industries, we're going to get their money. And that's how the states look at it. They're not looking that they're going to add more money out of your pocket. They're going to take the whole United States.
It's still going to fall back on them. I don't care where they are, anywhere.
And I don't disagree with you. And that's why I'm here to advocate. I'm here to do certain things. One is I'm here to educate, to tell you what's coming down the pike.
But see,
and the other part is I'm here to tell you that we still can fight this, that we can still try and stop this, so that my vision of what the states are doing won't come about.
There's an easy way to fight it.
There are ways to fight it. First of all, your state legislatures, you can't fight it. There is a federal law right now up that basically says the states cannot change anything in regard to internet commerce.
See, you didn't like the gang rules and stuff like that. Okay, you look what happened to the industry, the gang industry right now.
Mm-hmm.
With Grand Theft Auto and people want to like legislate that, and high class officials around the United States saying, we need to regulate the video game industry just like.
You brought up Grand Theft Auto, and I'll get to it in a minute. I promise. Okay, he hit one of. I do a lot of work for the computer gaming and gambling companies in this regard. So he hit a button. First of all, my statement in regards to that game is that basically I think the company Rocks, Take Two, which basically makes that game, are idiots. They knew. What was there? They knew that all you had to do was flip a little switch and you got the scene, the hot coffee scene. And that's about as far as I'm going to go.
A switch sold by a third company that's not affiliated with them.
It was incorporated within their disk. They knew about it.
But unable to be accessed.
No. You needed a third-party program, but it was there. All they had to do was tell the rating board that it was there and that it needed a third party developer to go, and none of this would have happened. They presented it to the rating board, they lied, they didn't bring it up. Then they came back and a third party developer did find a way to flip the switch. Their first statement was, it wasn't a switch, it's not in there, it's a whole new separate program. Okay, all new, that was a lie, okay. Then they basically got called on that and they said, well, the developer really fooled everybody because we don't understand how we got the source code and cracked it. Well, I mean, there's hacking. What do we got, a three-hour hacking course later on here? I'm sure you can come and visit them. They'll tell you in 10 minutes how they were able to do it. So you had a game company that basically lied that prior to this, industry-wide has been fighting we don't want the government to regulate us, we want to regulate ourselves, right? But you can't lie to the people that you're asking to regulate, because then it's just like the accountants in Enron. I mean, the accountants basically had their own peer-to-peer review. Enron happened.
If somebody set up the police, stuff like that, okay, the ESRB, they're gonna fine Rockstar so much money because they did that.
But
that stuff was set up by the United States government for them to do that.
But there's a big difference between fining somebody, and if it's from a federal government, okay, it becomes criminal, and therefore
they have to let ESRB fine them how they
ERS, by the way, the ESRB doesn't have the capability to fine.
They say they're going to fine.
Yeah, they do, but they said a lot of things. They say a lot of things to placate a lot of people.
That they're like, you know, waking up a lot of people in the gaming industry. You know, they're thinking about voting now. You know, a lot of people in the gaming and people who work up, you know, get stuff off the internet. I mean, I think a lot of those people really don't, you know, care about politics or anything like that. When you start waking those people up, these people just want tax money from them.
Well,
then you're going to start waking people up, and then they're going to get rid of the people who really taking all the tax money.
Well,
who are they going to vote for? Because both the Democrats and Republicans are going to go up and say, be like, we need to protect the children. I mean, no politician is going to stand up and say, we need more porn and video games.
Okay. All right. I don't know. Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I've seen some of the politicians. You have the mic, sir. No.
I mean, if some politicians.
No. I understand. Hold on.
It kind of a three-part question, and the answer will probably all be in the same answer. But one
probably.
Is, what's the best website to be following the changes? I'm assuming in the end what they're going to expect from somebody that has a website is to register in all 46 states that collect sales tax, and that you'll do a quarterly to individually to all 46 states?
No.
No?
No. All right, in regards to your two questions, first of all, as of October 1st, it was October 1st of this year, and it became January of next year, then it got pushed back to October of this year. So let's assume October, until probably October comes about and God knows what they'll do. It is that if you are in those states that I mentioned, living, working there, or you sell to those states, you have the right to voluntarily assess sales tax to your customers. From now on, if you do not voluntarily do it, and this becomes actual law, you will then be liable for the sales tax that you did not collect, because at the time, even though it was voluntary, you knew you had to do it. Let me just finish the second part of his question. You will not have to register in all 48 states. Actually, it will be 49, because Oregon's now going to become a sales tax state. You will be required to register and file one return in one location, which at this time the return has not been created, nor has the location been created, nor has the infrastructure been created to accept your return and take your money and distribute it out. So you will be filing. Now they will recommend to you that you use what they call a certified service provider, or a CSP. A CSP is someone that if you use them, the states will not audit you. But if you don't use them, then the states can audit you. The problem is with the CSPs is that they work for the state. So if you have a question about how you have to assess or what rate you have to assess, which they're supposed to create a data bank for, which they haven't done yet, all right? Then you go to your CSP, the CSP is going to say, well, this is the highest rate you can charge, right? And they're going to tell you to charge that rate. Well, that's a really great way to run an e-commerce site. Let me charge the highest sales tax so that when people are hitting my website to buy my product and do a comparison shopping, oh good, they're going to see me having to charge a high rate.
But you won't see the sales tax until you get to the last billing.
No, it depends on the website, okay? The SSTP says this cannot be hidden. Okay, so when you get to the sales tax, you're going to have to, every page is going to have to sit there and say, no, I don't want to do this. Yes, sir?
It seems to me that is a direct violation of the ex post facto provision in the U.S. Constitution.
Which is why they stated it as voluntary, and why it is voluntary. No.
They make it law. They're still taking,
but it has the one of the
something that's occurred before it was
law. No. Follow me for a moment. Well, there's two reasons why that happens, and I'll explain that. But let me state again one thing. This is all voluntary till either the federal government. Jeez, it's a rough group. It's a rough group. What can I tell you? And I have no pride and ego. I'm wearing a dragon on my shoulder, come on. Is that until the federal government, which gets rid of your issue, until the federal government, either by a Supreme Court case or by the Senate and the House passing this legislature, this is all going to be voluntary until that happens. If the federal government states that, from a legislature of the Congress, states this isn't going to happen, we're not going to do this, then the states are prepared to take it to the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court votes it down, then anything that was voluntarily collected and given to the state, okay, literally is the manufacturer, the person that did it, it's his responsibility to reimburse it back. But if it does become law, okay, then what it is under federal law, okay, and under the block doctrine, if you know about a law and you decide to ignore it, okay, because you get states' rights issues here. You know, you can point to the federal government, but the states' rights are saying, this is a state law, it is not part of the federal law. You as a state resident must obey our laws. And this is one of our laws. We're not taking the position that what your statement is, that it is a state law that crosses state lines. We're saying it's a state law, period. So for the, I would assume the majority of us here are from Georgia, just out of humor, I'll make that assumption. So therefore, if Georgia passes this and you're a Georgia resident and you have an e-commerce site, you will obey the Georgia law. And when that law, if it becomes a federal law, okay, then it's a blessing, you know, it's a second blessing. Then they basically drop the guise that this is not in violation of interstate commerce, which then comes to your issue. And if they lose, then all the sales tax that somebody took, probably that manufacturer, I'll use manufacturer, or e-website, it's going to be his liability to basically, you're going to hit with reimbursement. Yes, sir.
Two things here. First one is, how much of this is the government? Government always wants more money. How much of it is them simply wanting more money versus wanting to get more states' rights away from the federal government?
Okay, let me, now we're talking, when you say government, we're talking state government?
State government versus federal government, okay. Because we've got the two separate spheres of influence, mm-hmm. And especially the interstate commerce with these e-websites and everything going here, more and more is falling under interstate commerce, which is a federal domain, mm-hmm. And...
Well, no. Interstate commerce only deals with commerce that goes between states, based on where nexus is, where the actual transaction is. That's what it is. Wait. Yeah, but this isn't commerce between states. Let me answer his question. First part of your question is, how much is revenue versus states' rights?
Right.
Okay, this is 99.9% money, okay. And 0.1% states' rights. Okay, right. This is money. The states say they're losing $15 billion a year. Let's say it's $15 billion now. If you take the extrapolation of how much e-commerce is going to grow, and not that much based on business to business is really the biggest part,
yeah.
Right? That's the big driving. And they're now going to get business to business, not on a sales tax issue, but on a use tax issue, which is really the same laws, just different way. You're going to talk that in 5 years, you're going to talk $15 billion. It's going to be $75 to $100 billion the states are going to be losing out. This is all about money. And the states have structured the laws that this does not involve interstate commerce, because interstate commerce does not utilize the definition of nexus. Okay, and that's one of the problems of the Supreme Court case about sales tax, where you're required to have a physical presence, okay, in another state, all right, is actually what the states are challenging.
Then the second one was on, that's pretty much, I lost the train of thought on that one.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'll come back to that one there.
Fair enough. Ah, a new voice.
I'm just wondering, well, you know, where's any sort of checks and balances on this? I want to make sure I got this straight. So we were talking about the scenario of someone physically drives into another state with a lower sales tax. Theoretically, they can hit us for, you know, that back tax, right?
Well, you actually are required under your
the
state
use
law.
Yeah, tax
right.
box on the state.
You are supposed
I've
to. You're supposed to submit that and state that. That's state law.
Yeah.
Okay. You're supposed to do that by going to another state. They're not saying don't go to the other state.
Yeah.
They're just saying pay us our rightful due.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you are stating that you don't do it, I'm not saying you. By the way, we're not using names.
Well, yeah. I live in Indiana near Illinois, so the differential is about 3%.
Okay.
Illinois comes into Indiana, but
I understand.
Extending this to the internet sphere.
Well, let's take that position of that state. First of all, since you have a state law that says you're supposed to declare it and you don't declare it, the statute of limitations has not run on that. Therefore, it's open-ended. Okay, so therefore, they can go back as far retroactively as they can prove it, and you would have to then take the counterposition to do something. If we go to the internet, okay, New Jersey was a perfect example where they went back. Their statement was that they had a perfect example. New Jersey had that box. The guy never filled in the box.
Yeah.
The law said, fill in the box, pay us our due. The guy didn't want to pay the due. Therefore, the statute of limitations did not run. Therefore, they were allowed to go back. It's just like if you file an income tax return and you basically miscalculate on your return, and you said, you know that $50,000 consulting check that I got, you know, I forgot to put it on my return and pay taxes on. Well, because it, and let us say you only made $50,000. I'm structuring this for a very specific reason. Okay, well, under federal law and most state laws, okay, that's basically a fraud issue because it's based on gross income tax. So you underreported, so there is no statute of limitations. So this could have happened in 1960, and if they find out about it, and they can go back because they do have all these good records. Yeah, they can go back and assess you that far back.
Okay, but the taxation structure that they're proposing now, well, instead of not charging sales tax if you don't have the physical presence, they're wanting you to charge your own sales tax or the sales tax for the customer state, or?
It is going to be, right now there are 3,500 different sales tax taxing jurisdictions within the country. And if New Hampshire jumps in, you know, 35,001. They are supposed to effectively uniform the tax rate based on goods. A perfect example is, and just because I'm familiar with it, New York has 17 definitions of what a boot is. Okay, I mean, there's a below the ankle boot, above the ankle boot, halfway up the calf, above the knee. I mean, is it a leather boot? Is it a cloth boot? High heels, low heels, God bless it. And each one has a different rate. Okay, they're not all listed as clothing. Okay, so the SSTP says this will have to be uniform so that a boot in New York will get one rate, no matter how you want to cut this cake. And that boot will be the same in Indiana, Illinois, California, Florida, Georgia. That boot is that boot, and it's this sales tax rate. Period.
So it basically, if these laws are passed, there's no disincentive for the states to raise the sales tax because, well, you know, forgive my cynicism about citizen activism here and, you know, being able to rein our representatives in. But, you know, from what I've understood, you know, the main disincentive to raise sales tax is, you know, down official people just stepping across the state line, and, you know, if you make it too high, nobody's going to buy in your state.
Which is why I used the example of the example that was brought to me between Cobb and Fulton.
Yeah.
Right? Where basically the one that's doing 5 and the one that's doing 8, well, the 5's going up to the 8.
Yeah.
It's
so
not,
we're just going to see upward spiral unchecked.
Right. But you'll also see if the localities start getting into it, you have a lot of localities all across this country that do not charge sales tax that will start charging sales tax just so that they can basically, you know, they're not looking at the mom and pop that's going to the milk store to buy the milk container so that they put the milk into the kid. They're looking and saying, oh, the person that's buying the generator, now take a look how much money I can get. So they're going to basically be earning their own local citizens and residents. Yes.
Paying some sales tax, I can see, but.
Right.
You know.
Yes, sir.
Has anybody done any offhand calculating on how this is going to affect the, or explode the underground economy? The people who are going to be working to get around all this?
Well, first of all, I understand you're saying. First of all, we're part of the EFF here. You can't really use the underground economy on a website. I mean, I'm just saying, you understand what I'm saying. And pretty much the web, you know, will this explode? Yes and no to an extent, because since, geez, we're really going to be all over the board here. Since the Patriots Act, the aspect of cash and movement of cash has been, I would say, greatly curtailed, more than anything else. I mean, the Patriots Act really put a damper on the utilization of cash and on barter goods. So I understand your statement in regards to the underground economy, how it will grow. I don't think that this is going to be the big issue. What I see this to be is this is going to be a deterrent for small business to be put on a level playing field. I think that it will cost small business almost $100,000 to get into a compliance mode with software, whether they use a CSP or other entities that are going to be providing this service, you know, at a reasonable rate, saying, great, do you want to, you know, the statement's going to be, do you want to go to a person that works for the state and listen to them, or do you want to basically pay a little bit more and get some advice that might save you some money and make you competitive?
I see a lot of putting a lot of small businesses out of business because they're just not going to be able to fully comply.
They will not be able to fully comply. They will comply in this regard. They will basically not take orders in a lot of states. They will basically limit their distribution chain, and that will limit their growth factor. And this is something that, you know, is, you know, it's good for big business. This law is great for big business. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir.
This is a little off topic, but
We're all over the
but
place.
Could I ask you to expand on the Patriot Act and cash, limiting cash flow? I've heard a lot of bad things about the Patriot Act before, but I haven't heard anything about that specifically.
Oh boy, the Patriot. There was always a federal law that anybody that deposits over $10,000 in cash in a bank had to be so reported. And it was an FDIC law. You know, it was, you know, yeah, you put in $5,000 the first day and you put in $5,000 the second day, and, you know, each one is a separate day, and the banks, you know, they just wanted their money. The Patriot Act, in regards to that, made a very stiff penalty to the banks that they couldn't ignore anymore, that they couldn't say, you know, what are you doing to me here? So what has happened is the states now do it on a cumulative basis. They take it for a month. And then if they do it for a month, and this is the states doing it, but it was in effect because of the problems of the Patriots Act. You know, you don't want to be brought, you as a Citibank, you know, Bank North does not want to be brought up under the Patriots Act saying you are basically hiding potential terrorist cash. They don't want to deal with it. So basically any cash deposits now are being accumulated up, and if it's over a certain amount, then they call you in. And they say, what is this? You need to fill out this federal form. Whether or not, I'm saying, you know, the vendors here, I mean, they hopefully, God willing, they're making thousands of dollars here because we're spending thousands of dollars here and it's cash. You know, they're gonna have to go to their bank and deposit and probably fill out a form. You know, so it's an effect of the Patriots Act that's basically limited the cash in the marketplace. You also have the Fed Reserve. If you take a look at the Fed Reserve, the money supply, the actual free cash money supply, believe it or not, they're diminishing it. You know, they're not allowing free cash to be out there. The biggest fear was, I mean, it somewhat happened, is, you know, our new money now has an encoded chip, you know, that strip on it. Well, all the people that basically have cash that don't have the encoded strip, you know, how to move in and change that money, or still a lot of them have it in their basement or in their mattresses. You choose. I don't care.
Take two, I'll go.
Okay. And we have a gentleman in the back.
Okay.
I'm used to such a big crowd.
That's a bigger crowd than I thought it would be. Let me put this an interesting way. In some cities in Alabama, for example, the city tax rate is 4%. And in other places, it's down around 1 or 2, but those places are shrinking. If someone was to come into one of those places that charges 4% tax, which makes a total up to 9% in most cases, or 10%, and then they take the item back to their home state, since the sales tax was paid over in Alabama in a particular city, can that other state come after them and say, hey, you owe us 5% or 8% or whatever?
The difference?
Or the...
Which state do they live in? The other state?
The other state.
Yes.
They can come back and charge them the full 8% or 9%.
Well, no, what you would sit there and say, the state will come back and assess you the full amount. You will then go back and say, excuse me, I paid the state of Alabama this amount, so I only owe you the difference. And they will compromise and say, you're right, give us the difference. You've in essence said, yeah, I owe you the money, I just don't owe you this amount of money. Okay, I only owe you that amount of money. And you know, once you take that step, you've omitted the liability. They're more than happy. They're there.
Yeah.
The question I wanted to ask earlier was,
with this essentially being a volunteer issue right now, but none of the infrastructure being there, and it sounds like the way they've got it set up is that it doesn't really matter how long they take to create the infrastructure, you're going to be liable from the time that the state puts it on there as a voluntary action. At what point does the law, or rather, do the states trying to make the law really become null and void, and they can simply grandfather in there and like a de facto law? Well, we've got 49 states that have been doing this for the past 10 years. We don't need to push legislation. It's already there. Everyone's doing it.
And the states have taken the position that until the federal government blesses this, either by a Supreme Court case or by Congress, it will be voluntary.
But they can change that 10 years down the line.
No, because then they fall directly into the issues of interstate commerce and a Supreme Court case that basically says they can't do it.
Well, couldn't they push against the federal law that, look, we're all doing this already. All the states are agreed that we want this to change.
And then I would be sitting here, if they ever did that, I would be sitting here, if I'm still alive and coming here, and saying that we should call up the EFF, who I heard basically does pro bono work, and basically I'd say, go file a lawsuit on my behalf that the states are violating my federal rights.
Okay.
And that will be a case that by the documentation, I mean, if I was an attorney, I'd hang the states on their own documentation of them saying that it's got to be voluntary until Congress does this. So because they changed their mind, I would sit there in court and say, Your Honor, they said that it's voluntary until this time. Now they're saying it's not. Okay? You know, it's kind of like getting caught with your own memorandum. You know, it's not a good thing.
So if everyone's doing it, they can't go to the feds and say, well, look, everyone's doing it. We want this to become law because we're already doing it.
That they can do, but then Congress still has to pass the law. I mean, you have seen it actually, it's actually taking place now. You've seen two bills in Congress already that have been hidden, but what the law, what the bill says, and it's been argued states' rights versus federal rights, is it's stating is the states are allowed to tax jurisdictionally who they determine they can tax. And I saw it on CNN, and I heard it, and I'm sitting there going, this makes no sense. That's not what the issue is. The issue is the states want to basically say, I, in Georgia, can go tax you in Indiana. That's what they want to do. And that is what is in front of Congress right now.
Considering the fickle nature of the Supreme Court with the recent Kelo decision, I wouldn't have any confidence the Supreme Court would rule the way it really should rule. I mean, even the most liberal people I know thought that the Kelo decision was wrong. You know, and everybody I know I've ever talked to said Kelo was wrong, but yet they ruled that it was legitimate and it could be done. So I have, certainly have no confidence in the Supreme Court supporting, you know.
Oh, I agree with your opinion. I mean, that to me is an opinion about our current. If this goes in front of a court, the Supreme Court, whereas before I would say that we would have a 90% chance of the court ruling against them because they have a Supreme Court case specifically on point that says they can't do this, I would now have to say I'm at 50-50. And for this case to be at 50-50 gets me extremely worried. Yes, sir.
I would like to say something about all these taxes and stuff and talking about and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what happened in California. I mean, you know what happened in California?
Well, there's a lot of things that have happened in California. No, okay. Which one are we specifically talking about?
Schwarzenegger. And it ain't really about Schwarzenegger. It's about the people in that state were just tired of getting taxed. I mean, they were just so tired of getting taxed that they came in and they did something like, you know, that was incredible. Like, you know, elect the actor, like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a bad person. He's really, really good guy. I mean, he's a real good businessman and stuff like that. But, I mean, those people, like, just getting taxed out the frame. And then, okay, then what happened was when the election was even finna go on, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals tried to stop it. I mean, I hear people talking about, you know, the court gonna do this, the Supreme Court ruled this way, you're gonna have to pay them taxes, though, that's gonna be the law of the land. No, it's not. I mean, because the same stuff that happened in California can happen to the whole nation. I mean, the people in who sit on the Supreme Court, is they can get taken off too. I mean, law can change overnight. I mean, ain't nothing set in stone. I mean, because when the people of the United States of America just start seeing they getting railroaded and shafted, I mean, they're going to, you know, you think that people down there in New Orleans right now are pissed off. You know, when you start messing around with people's money and, you know, just because the state government just want to get some because they probably overspending and...
I understand your statement, I think. I think mm-hmm. I'm there. I don't think that the sales tax issue is going to be as broad as what basically got the governor basically dismissed, which was basically their energy crisis, where people
yeah, but died. See that where they fall too.
They, if the energy crisis had not happened in California, he never would have been recalled as a governor, and Arnold would never have been.
If he wouldn't have had like the environmentalist wackos in his back pocket, and they would have let them like build refineries and cut trees and stuff in that state, no, he wouldn't have been recalled because he would have had proper infrastructure to really support that state.
Well, I appreciate your view on the situation in California. I disagree with it. It's not my view.
Yeah.
I don't think that the people will, this will be an effect that will have a massive effect on small business and individuals.
See, but that's the same thing in California.
But it will not have an effect on big business, and it will not have an effect on people that literally are wage earners. It will have effect more on your independent people. It will take a hit on your middle class and your lower class, but I think that this is not going to, if this becomes law, because it's already law in Europe, it's already, and by being law in Europe, which is really the center of that, and there are approximately India in, 2006 is finally going to go on a VAT tax. China will be going on a VAT tax. This is the law that they've grown up with, and this is what they're used to, and it's just a reflection of what's coming here. Yes, sir.
What's a VAT tax, please?
It's value a value. Tax. It's a value-added tax. It's the European. What I say is the European equivalent of a sales tax, but it's a much more involved system. But to equate it, to really make it broad stroke simplified, it's a sales tax.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
I need a clarification and maybe a question. I'm from out of state, so when I come down here, all the gas and the hotel rooms and everything I buy, I'll have to pay my home state's taxes for those things? Is that what you're saying?
What state are you from?
West Virginia.
West Virginia. Nice state. Used to go there and check out coal mines, but that's a different issue. What it will be is that you are required in West Virginia actually now that if you basically buy goods and services in another state, and it you are required to state that. Now, because it's a hotel, that's exempt. Food is exempt. But if you start to buy, like, cricket here, or armor or a sword or something of that nature, you bought it here, and let's say there was no sales tax here, but in your state there would be a sales tax. Yes, you're supposed to declare it to that sales, to your state, and pay the appropriate sales tax on it.
Well, how would that affect, say, like a Miami or a tourist place, where you've got people from all 50 states coming there, like for spring break, and every different person would have to pay different taxes?
Well, no. Again, I'm going back to my days of spring break, which could be different than today's spring break days. I mean, it's a possibility where basically it's, you're paying room, you're paying board, and you're paying for a lot of alcohol. Okay, I mean, that was my generation of spring break. I'm sure it could be the same. So therefore, in all those three things, again, room and board, like here, don't worry about it. Alcohol, believe it or not, hits room and board, so you don't have to worry about it. It's more of, let's say you went to spring break, you went back home to West Virginia, and you said, I didn't buy that really cool T-shirt. And you get on the internet and you download and buy from a Florida website, I survived spring break at whatever, Pompano Beach. I mean, I'm not saying that Pompano Beach is a spring break place. I'm sure it is. And you don't pay sales tax in Florida, but you bring that up to where you are, okay? That Florida website will now be required to charge you West Virginia sales tax. Okay, so you're not getting away from the sales tax issue. Okay.
You have a national sales tax issue.
Well, it isn't national because national implies every state has to agree to it, and there are still, the state of Texas does not have a sales tax, and they are not joining this. The state of New Hampshire, strangely enough, does not have a sales tax, and the governor is required to take a no sales tax pledge, and if he doesn't, he won't get elected. So it's like, you can't make it national unless you can have, all of the nation in agreeing to it. The federal government can't shove it down, but the states will be able to do it from a perspective of, basically changing definitions.
With his question, you mentioned armor specifically.
What about specialty items? Could you argue that it was not available in your state and you were forced to go out of state?
So pay the sales tax.
So
you can't argue because, if you're trying to buy plutonium, maybe you could argue it that way.
15 minutes.
Okay. So I would say to you, no. I mean, food, lodging, that's alcohol, right. That's going to be exempt out. That is exempted out already.
Does that include medicine?
No. No, pharmaceuticals. We call them pharmaceuticals. Let's call them pharmaceuticals just because drugs imply something I don't want to go near in this conversation.
Speaking of underground economy.
Right. Yeah. Pharmaceuticals is not. In fact, if we talk about pharmaceuticals, the biggest internet pharmaceutical country in the world is Canada, and it's only the biggest pharmaceutical country in the world because the United States keeps buying their drugs up in Canada. They are actually proposing a law to stop that. Canada is, because of the pressure from the United States saying that this is hurting, And the reason, by the way, the best reason I've ever heard in my life is, and this has been going on for years, let's be polite in saying years, is that Canada will run out of drugs for Canadians if they keep shipping it down to the United States. So therefore, we have to stop this and make sure that we have enough pharmaceuticals in our country before we can ship it out. Damn, but they've been doing it for how many years? You know. Yes?
We've been talking about...
Sorry about that.
We've been talking about, you know, he goes down to spring break and he comes back to West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I live here in Georgia. I want to buy something from a website here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Can the state of Georgia tell that website that, hey, for Georgia residents, they have to charge sales tax?
They're supposed to be doing it now.
Oh, they're supposed to be doing it now, but they're not.
Because there's no enforcement ability.
They don't have an enforceability at this moment, but the law states in any state that if you are a website or your company is located in your state that has sales tax and you sell to a state resident, you are supposed to charge sales tax. Depending on the size and structure of the website, that may or may not be being done. Okay? This
website knows that it's a guy who's local.
The shipping address.
You know, I get it by the credit card address. I don't need the shipping address. Shipping address is no longer valid. In this law, this is all going to be, because basically if you had a shipping address, right, if let's go back to Fulton and Cord. Jeez, I got to remember these.
Cobb.
Thank any help.
Corn Cobb.
Call it Cobb. Let's say you basically had a friend that lived in Cobb, you know, and you were in Fulton. You know, I could say, you know, I got to visit my friend on Friday. So on Monday, I go and I order my thing and you just got to, you know, and have it shipped to Cobb County. And therefore, I'd only be hit with a sales tax. But the credit card I'm using is listed to an individual that lives in Fulton County. So guess what? They're going to assess. And the technology is there, by the way. It already exists. They will assess sales tax based on where the credit card is, where the colder address of the credit card is.
But I can have a P.O. box in another county. It doesn't work either way you do.
Yes, it does, because basically you will now be starting to declare to Visa and MasterCard where you live. Not a P.O. box, where you're living. And if they find out that you've lied, okay, they basically have you for fraud. Okay.
Legal postal. I have a private mailbox at a mailbox that's at a location.
They ask for your home residence. Your home residence is what is required on your credit card application.
With the Patriot Act, if you refuse to give your home address, they close your mailbox.
That's right. You're
my mailbox because I got pissed off.
Hang on. The place where I have my private mailbox, they know where my home address is because it's a postal and federal regulation.
And therefore, they basically are send it over to the credit card company. You're not hiding it. You might like to think.
No, I'm not suggesting that I am hiding it. I'm simply saying that as far as Amex knows, the address to which they send my statements is the address they send my statements.
And Amex and Visa and MasterCard, if they have a P.O. box, okay, are going to be required and are starting to do it already, going to your P.O. company, okay, that's holding your box and saying, we need the personal residence. If that personal residence is not on file, okay, then that box company, what would you call it, mailbox company, will basically go to you and say, I need your personal residence. If you refuse to give it, okay, they close you down. And if they don't, and therefore, let's say you being a person, you give it, right? They then send it over to Visa MasterCard. And that information is what is the information that basically, when I am basically doing a transaction.
What is the legal basis for the private mailbox company for releasing that information about you to a commercial entity?
Patriot Act says they have to.
The Patriot Act presumably says they have to release it to the government. Does it say they have to release it to Visa?
They basically say anything to basically help support and track the potential illegal flow of money. That information must be released so the government doesn't have to go to the mailbox company. They can just go to Visa and MasterCard. It's a lazy man's way of looking at it, but they want to go to one source at all. You know, and there are 1,000 ways that you can, you know, we can sit here and literally figure, but at the end of the day, it's going to be your real personal residence. That's what it's going to be. Yes.
Just one last question. You know, what are the arguments, or where does the government get off telling us, you know, that we have to stick with our state sales tax if we're buying in another state because, well, for example, if I set up an e-commerce business, you know, in Northwest Indiana, it's a much lower sales tax, but, you know, you get what you pay for. There's lower infrastructure and social safety net. And if I do the same in Chicago suburbs instead, it's going to be a heck of a lot higher, but there's more services, fair enough. But, you know, when I'm down here in Georgia, you know, I'm not using Indiana's infrastructure or public protection. You know, I'm relying on Georgia's. So, you know, paying that is fair enough, but having to go back to Indiana and say, pay the differential, you know, what's the argument there?
Well, I mean, which state's argument would you like? I mean, the Georgia's argument, if you live in Georgia, the Georgia's argument is you owe Georgia sales tax, okay? Because you basically are, if you are a consumer and you're buying outside the state, you're not basically paying us our sales tax. We want our money, okay? And that is literally what it is. If you're in India, no one is saying to you that you can't set up your operation in either the lower part of the state or in the Chicago suburb. Nobody's saying that. What they are saying, though, is that prior to where you would only charge sales tax to someone in your state, okay, now you're going to charge sales tax based on a sales tax of the other state, which is uniform. You will fill out a form. You will say that I did X amount of transactions in that state of Georgia, and then you will remit it, and the central group will process it, take a processing fee, and then remit the difference to the state of Georgia.
So
you're collecting sales tax that will end up in your state. If you collect sales tax, you start up e-commerce. That end sales tax will end up in the state of Georgia.
So you pay that state sales tax regardless.
But as a consumer, as an e-commerce website?
I'm talking as a consumer.
As a consumer, you're going to pay your state sales tax where you live.
But
regardless of where the company is that you bought from.
But that's BS because, you know, if I'm buying from a company in Indiana, it's lower sales tax and, you know, they don't support people. But
not anymore. It won't be anymore. I understand your issue.
It's not fair.
You're
right.
The state of Indiana thinks it's not fair, and there's the whole full faith and commerce clause that's being argued between the states about it.
I'm just saying, you know,
justifiable
argument do they have?
Their argument is that they have they have a higher sales tax. I'm wrapping up in a couple of minutes. Jeez, I've never had this problem. I got five. Their argument is they need the sales tax money to provide services, that there is too much sales tax money that is falling through the crack. Therefore, they're sitting there and saying, we need to capture this money. And this is a structure that they've created to capture the money.
Man, if they discharge the porn industry, they'll make their money back.
Well, by the way, the porno industry will probably be charged because that's digital downloaded software. It will now be all you guys that load software and women that load software on your websites from downloading will now actually have a sales tax. I've been told to wrap up. What I'm here to state is that, first of all, I'd like to thank you all for have come. I mean, this is the biggest group I've had, and I really appreciate that. Ever. Yes. Except for gaming, when I was talking about gaming, you know, and MMOPGs, that you need to understand what's happening, the changing legislation. You need to prepare. You need, even though you may not believe in civilian activism, you need to write to your senators. You need to write to your representatives. You need to tell them that you're against this. You need to tell them that this isn't fair, that this hurts small business. This hurts individuals. This doesn't create a level playing field between small business and big business. This literally takes small business and basically blows them up. This literally takes individuals and actually reduces them economically. This is bad for the country. This is bad for the economy. And it's actually bad for you.
Well, closing the interstate sales tax loophole is bad for the individual?
Yes.
Because we've been getting away with not paying sales tax on something we've been legally obligated to pay for years, but nobody was ever tracking us down on?
If you're in a state, okay, my statement to you is this, all right, the amount of money that they say they're losing, they're not losing. Because you know why? The companies that are in their state are paying a higher corporate tax. And that's the one component they refuse to evaluate into every one of their numbers.
But they've already adjusted for the lost revenue.
They have already adjusted for lost revenue and will continue. This is the old catalog sales argument, where they said, hi, catalog sales will make us all go bust. And it never did. And this is now the new argument. Internet commerce is going to make us all go bust. And it's not. It's fallacious at best. I've never seen a state show me by their books, because they show me, oh, well, we're a manufacturing state. Therefore, we've lost all this sales tax. And I said, great, you lost all that sales tax. I'll give you that. Now, how much income tax, corporate income tax, have you made because your corporations have websites and are shipping out? And they don't want to discuss that.
So what we should really be saying is, fine, if you want to close the loopholes on interstate sales tax reporting, you also must be upfront about the additional revenue it does produce and reduce the corporate income tax by that amount.
And that's what they won't do.
Because what they're that's what we should be saying to our legislators. Not this is unfair, because government never cares about fair.
Well,
you
government
have to make the books balance.
Well, actually, government cares about one thing.
Money.
They care about money, and we get to the other aspect of they care about getting reelected. They really
no, they care about
solution
power.
Doesn't help individuals and small businesses. That helps big business. It still makes my eBay sales
doomed.
It still chills my eBay buy.
I got a good one for you. If you want to talk, I'm going to leave because I have to wrap this up, and it'll be something I would love to talk about probably next year. Picture eBay if it had to charge sales tax.
Wouldn't exist.
No, not at all. eBay is a big vendor, has the infrastructure, has the software. It would be almost nothing to them to implement this.
Yes, people wouldn't use it.
You see, the issue is
fine.
That
eBay could do it. Bricklink sells Lego.
Yeah, the small business has a much harder problem complying. The eBay just doesn't happen to be the right example.
No,
eBay
is the right example.
Right. Suddenly I'm not buying the pest dispenser from Georgia. I can't. That it's going to chill the whole process.
What eBay will do for you as the small merchant on eBay is they will become the sales tax.
You're missing the point. You're missing the point. eBay, first of all, has stated if they're going to have to do this, they're going to charge for it. Okay.
Of course they will.
Second is most eBay vendors, when they basically get on the eBay site, the majority of them basically take a look, say, as a buyer, I'm going to sit there and say, you know, I'm beating sales tax here. Whereas if I'm basically being charged sales tax, all of a sudden, brick and mortars are going to become a hell of a lot more competitive. Okay. And a lot of the eBay vendors are just going to walk away. Because the other issue is, I believe that most eBay vendors are honest and declare 100% of what they make, all right? But there are a lot of eBay vendors that don't declare anything. And if they're basically being charged sales tax, then you have a traceable trail for income tax. And you have a traceable trail for income tax evasion, because they haven't been paying.
And that's a bad line.
People won't use eBay anymore.
People won't use eBay.
If people will stop using it because they're no longer going to be able to get away with something, I don't have a big problem with the impact. I have a problem with the fact that if there isn't a very efficient, competitive between small and big business way of handling the collection and reporting, then yes, you've got a problem for small business. It's very real. We have to deal with it. But I have no sympathy for anyone who's going to be hurt because now they can't get away with something anymore that they've been getting away with.
I have no problem with paying one state sales tax. I have a problem with paying my state sales tax no matter what.
Move to that part of Indiana where the state sales tax is lower.
Well, therefore,
you get less services for it.
As I am wrapping it up, I am going to wrap it up now.
Well, we want to keep this going.
You can. You can. Actually, write to Scott, and maybe he'll extend me next year or invite me back next year.
Extend me next year.
But the issue is it's a compliance problem. It's going to be a cost problem. It is detrimental to small business. It's detrimental to individuals. And you need to be aware of it, because as you move forward and you start doing your own businesses, you need to know about a compliance cost as well as a possible, for some of us, injustice that the states are perpetuating just to basically grab money. All right?
Yeah.
But no more questions.